I didn't think it was not for kids. So for me, my experience of it was that if you are, like, if your family are secular atheists, you will find nothing objectionable in this thing. There is nothing, there's no swearing, there's no sex, there's no violence, no drugs, nothing like that. It's in that sense appropriate for children. And if your worldview is a secular atheist worldview, then nothing will be challenged there. It does feel a little bit like if secular atheists decided to make a VeggieTales.
Yes!
That's what it is.
Welcome to another episode of Is This For Kids? I am Jonathan Bearded Blubbins.
I am Katie, Mrs. Ruby.
And I have a very deep question for you today. We are going to be talking about Orion and the Dark, a new Netflix movie that came out, was released on Netflix, did not go to the big screen. Some critics had some thoughts on that. That was very funny.
Oh, I didn't look that up.
That's, yeah, it was kind of funny. They're like, well, there's a reason it didn't get on the big screen. Anyway, what was your biggest fear when you were growing up?
Paul McCartney.
What do you mean? What do you mean Paul McCartney?
So when I was a kid in like middle school or so, we like got really into this whole conspiracy theory that Paul McCartney had died in a car accident in 1966 and they replaced him with a body double because they weren't ready to be done being famous. And there's like all these clues in the music and in it's just a really dumb conspiracy theory. But I became convinced that like I was the only person who truly knew. And so Paul McCartney was going to pop up out of somewhere and be like, you know, and like he would have, but like the whole thing was that it was like a fiery car crash and his teeth were all knocked out so they couldn't identify the body. And so this like gummy, toothless, burned person was going to pop up in front of me one day and be like, ah! And I was not excited about it.
So you're being serious. I thought you were joking.
I thought
it was a joke.
To this day, you know how when you like go look in a dark space and like if you had to go look up in your attic and you had to climb up there and put your head up, you're like, I don't want to know what's up here because I might see something scary. Like most likely it's going to be raccoons if it's anything. For me, it's a dead body of Paul McCartney's.
So for me, don't judge.
I mean, am I in a position to at this point?
No, good point. It was, for me, it was The Dark. More than anything, mm-hmm. If I'm being completely honest, I think I still am. Like, so hear me out. I've been married for 10 years, 3 kids.
Yeah.
All right. When Jody and or the kids are home, so even if she's out of town, but like I've got the kids, there is nothing that could, nothing, a tornado, someone literally breaking in, nothing that would make me scared. Uh-huh. That where I wouldn't just run out and confront whatever it was to make sure my kids or Jody were okay.
Right.
When they're not home and I'm by myself, or I'm traveling and I'm in a hotel room by myself,
right?
Lights on all the time.
100%.
Everywhere. Every light in the entire house. If I'm in the hotel, lately the I've just graduated to the bathroom. So I used to leave like a lamp on and now like I can't sleep well when I do that. And I don't know what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
I just want to be able to see. I'm afraid of someone being there and me not being able to react fast enough to like do something.
You're afraid of being taken by surprise.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
By Paul McCartney.
Is that weird? By Paul McCartney. So anyway, I'm like an absolute champion when I'm home with Jody and the kids. But when I'm alone, I am a coward. If I heard a noise, the same noise that I got up to go like handle things and take care of the family, if that noise happened when I was alone, I'm not leaving the room.
Wow.
Doors locked, under the covers, 36 years old.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm mildly afraid that somehow this podcast gets back to Paul McCartney and he's going to send me a letter.
Wait, he is alive?
Buddy, what?
I'm kidding. He does tours right now.
I know.
He just did a show at the United Center a couple years ago that my mom and dad went to and said it was like the best. He played for like 3 hours.
I mean, if we are submitting to the idea that that is Paul McCartney, then yes, he still is alive.
Yeah. So this movie, Orion and the Dark, great intro, by the way, for this episode. That was a really fun conversation.
So many minutes of banter.
Of good things.
Yeah, we love
it. So this new movie, Orion and the Dark, you want to explain it a little bit? You want me to?
So I can, if you would like me to.
Sure. You're just better at it than I am.
All right. So Orion is an 11-year-old kid who's afraid of the dark, among other things. He's basically afraid of everything.
He has anxiety.
Yeah, he eventually meets Dark, the personification of Dark, and is invited to spend 24 hours with him to overcome his fear and to really understand what Dark does and the value that Dark has in the world. And along the way, he meets dreams, unexplained noise, insomnia, sleep, and quiet. And he also meets up with their pseudo-enemy, Light. And then after a while there, Dark goes away because of so many people misunderstanding him and saying that Dark is terrible and they're scared of it and they hate the dark and things like that. So Dark goes away and Orion experiences all of the things that would happen if there were no Dark. And so there is a plot to bring Dark back, and in which Orion sort of outside the space-time continuum, meets his own daughter and eventually grandson, but they're all the same age, and there's mm-hmm. a time travel breakdown problem.
With time travel monsters, even.
Time travel monsters, indeed. That got a little weird, but whatever. That's the general gist.
The crazy thing is, the ending, like the last 30 minutes were so bad, but it was probably the most intriguing part of the whole movie, even though it was bad. I had no idea what was happening.
It was,
I was
like,
how
somebody
is this even
in
possible?
A writer's room somewhere was like, how are we going to wrap this up?
Yeah, this needs to end ASAP. I thought the movie was very interesting. Mm-hmm. I had lots of, so I went in, you know, super open, like, man, this will probably, the first 10 minutes, I was like, man, this would be really good for my middle son, like, mm-hmm. who just has a couple little maybe anxiety things. I hope this movie is just going to be a home run for him. And then after like 15 minutes, I was like, no, what? There's some weird nihilistic, like, just end of world like things happening throughout the film, mm-hmm. that it felt misplaced. The way to summarize it for me is that it didn't really actually feel like a kid's movie to me at all. Yeah. I felt like it was for like a teenager or like a college kid who's for the first time questioning life.
Religion, yeah. So I didn't think it was not for kids. So for me, my experience of it was that if your family are secular atheists, you will find nothing objectionable in this thing. There is nothing, there's no swearing, there's no sex, there's no violence, no drugs, nothing like that. It's in that sense appropriate for children. And if your worldview is a secular atheist worldview, then nothing will be challenged there. It does feel a little bit like if secular atheists decided to make a VeggieTales.
Yes!
That's what it is.
That's
to
a
me,
great point.
It's secular atheist VeggieTales. So what you're talking about, the nihilism that comes in, there's a part like right at the beginning where Orion talks about how he's not afraid of death as much because death is nothingness. It's not dark. It's not the same as dark. Dark is something. There's noises in dark. There's things there. Death is nothing. That's the first hint that you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yep.
Like most children's things will try to hedge at an afterlife of some kind or a heaven, even if it's not like a deeply theological concept. This is one that's flatly telling children that death is nothingness.
Yeah.
And then it continues on to stuff that's a little bit more direct in its challenging to the idea of religion. And the first thing that the thing that stood out the most to me is Orion says something to the effect of, you can't just make up stories anytime that you're scared, because made up stories won't help you deal with the things that are really challenging in the world. And that very much feels like sort of a Reddit atheist way of viewing religion, right?
Yeah.
Like as just a bunch of stories that you make up to be able to deal with the world. Like at that point, it was very evident that this was intending to challenge a religious worldview.
Did you read the book?
I did.
Okay.
I actually bought it to bring for this and I forgot it.
And is the book similar?
No, actually the book, there is no time travel in the book. There's no light in the book. There's no conflict really other than Orion is afraid of the dark. And it's actually very sweet. So whatever concerns you might have, if you are religious and you object to the secular atheism aspect of it, then the book is fine. You're going to be fine with the book. It's just he learns how pretty the stars are at night.
Sure.
And with the dark, because of the dark, he's able to see the beauty of light and like things like that. It's not at all any of that. It's very much a children's book. Very beautiful illustrations. It's Emma, I can't think of her last name, who writes it. But she's a great illustrator. She's a wonderful author. She's got a lot of other books that are fantastic. I don't know. I've never noticed a theme of secular atheism in her books, but
okay.
So if you object to that, but you like the concept, buy the book.
100%. Interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. You did. So there was one thing that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, a total agreement with you there, and I caught that right away, and then it made this scene. It made me more upset than I normally would be with the scene. So there's a scene where Sleep's job is to go around to different houses and to put people to sleep. And the way that Sleep does this, and the three examples are strangling someone with a pillow, using chloroform, and hammering a crying baby in the head.
Yeah.
So like, okay, here's the thing. I'm not saying it's trying to say anything. It just is. It felt really weird. It felt out of place compared to anything else that happened in most of the movie.
Yeah.
And it felt more intentional when you and I had a conversation about it. And what did you say? You were like, where you were fine watching Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes does the
anvils.
Same thing.
No, but hold on. No, it does not, because anvils falling out of the sky and landing on you doesn't happen. But people use chloroform for horrible things, and it has like an insinuation to it.
It really does.
And like strangling is like one of the, you know, that's like one of the, what did they say in the murder shows I watch? It's like a crime of passion. Like strangling is like the worst way to kill someone.
Well, no, strangling is the only type of murder where you cannot possibly have a non contemplated effect. You know, like first degree murder requires that you pre-plan it. It takes 10 minutes to suffocate a person. So
how come in the movies it takes like 10 seconds?
Because that would be a very boring movie to watch somebody suffocate somebody for 10 minutes. But like you can take that pillow off at the 3-minute mark and that person will start breathing again and they may have some brain damage.
Oh my gosh,
but
put this on the podcast. This is going
to
be
so sorry. Like if you've listened to enough true crime, they'll tell you you can very rarely get away with like saying that it is a crime of passion because you could have turned back multiple times. You had to stand there for a long time to make that happen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I think it's different, right? Dynamite, like nobody's got like dynamite, you know, in real life, like under someone's bed. In Looney Tunes, is to me, it's a little different. And the baby crying and then like the hammer on the head, to me, was just I don't know, coupled with everything else, it seemed like it was trying to say maybe something about how babies aren't good or whatever, like they shouldn't cry. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading way too much into that. But that is a part where if I were a parent watching that with my kids, like I would have fast forward. If I knew that was coming, I would totally fast forward that.
I think it was just a joke that missed. Like, honestly, I don't think
it was supposed to be funny.
I think it was supposed to be funny in a Looney Tunes-y kind of way.
But it wasn't a funny movie. Like, it wasn't a very funny film at all.
No, but like
he
looks at him and is like, "Don't tell me how to do my job." Like it was meant to be a joke, I think. And I think it's one of those things that like Christians or religious people might feel that they need to latch onto and be like, "Look what this horrible thing did." And sure. I feel like that would be something that if I were a secular atheist, I would be like, "Oh, that was a joke. Come on, like lighten up."
Just a bad joke.
And again, if that's your worldview, you're not going to have an objection to Orion in the Dark. But if you are a religious person, if you know, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, it should be viewed that like religion is being kind of talked about as a series of stories that people use to be able to not deal with things. There's more evident things. Like if it was just the one line, maybe I would let it go. If it was just the two lines, maybe I would let it go. But actually, all of the characters which are not present in the book, their names are incredibly indicative. Orion, his daughter is Hypernia, and then her son is Tycho, or Tycho as I'm more familiar with it. And I'm sitting here watching, I was like, I wonder what Hypernia's story is, because I'm like listening to this and feeling this, you know, vibe going. And then when they said that the other kid shows up and his name is Tycho, I was like, how much you want to bet that's spelled T-Y-C-H-O? So I go and look it up to figure out how this kid's name is spelled, and it's T-Y-C-H-O. I was like, he's named for Tycho Brahe.
I don't know who that is.
He's a Danish astronomer, which is in line with the names, you know, the previous names in there.
Yep.
A Danish astronomer who was exiled from Denmark because he ran afoul of Lutheran bishops. And then Hypernia is an astronomer philosopher who was murdered by a gang of Christian men. Orion is a hunter, you know, a mortal who ran afoul of the gods by claiming he could defeat any of them. So like all of the people are people who were exiled, murdered, whatever, in the name of religion.
Yeah.
So I was like, you very clearly picked these people. Like you didn't pick, you know, Copernicus was not in there.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Good catch, by the way. I haven't heard any, I didn't see any of that in any research I did. Or anything. And
that's
I did
just
not
my particular nerdiness. You know why I remember Tycho Brahe?
Why?
His last name is spelled like B R A C E. Like it's a weird spelling. It's a Danish spelling. It doesn't. But my teacher pronounced it that way. And at the time when I learned about Tycho Brahe in the eighth grade with Mr. Walker.
Hi, Mr. Walker.
If you're still there from Westridge Middle School, the boy that I had a giant crush on was named Matt Brahe, and everybody was like, "Oh, well." Wow. So we got like stuck in my head. He also got into a duel and had his nose cut off and had a gold nose, first face.
The guy you had a crush on?
No, the Tycho Brahe.
I was like, "What?"
The guy that I had a crush on, I think, is a mortgage broker now.
Okay, wow, would have been a really cool story though if the guy you had a crush on had a gold nose.
That would have been wild for seventh grade. Just if you're looking for prosthesis, I wouldn't recommend gold. Certainly not for a seventh grader. They're gonna lose that.
I will say, like the one message that I like what the book is trying to wrestle with a little bit. I just don't like how, or the movie Orion in the Dark that they're trying to wrestle with that I don't think they do in a great way, is that it's okay to be afraid. Like it is right. Like it is okay to have things that you are scared of and to admit that. I just think it's better to read "I'm Not Scared, You're Scared" by Seth Meyers, who said, kids will never get to watch me at my late night shows, and so I hope that they that I can win their approval by writing this book. And it's this adorable book that my daughter right now is obsessed with, and I have to read to her every day, and it's super long, and I don't know why he would ever write such a long children's book. You're supposed to read in one sitting. But the whole point is that it's okay to be afraid. So in my mind...
Yeah. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good things to talk about, though. Let your, you know, ask your kids the things that they're afraid of.
And I think that this is one of those things that people will look at and say, you're overreacting to. Like, again, there's nothing objectionable as far as like drugs, sex, any of that. It's totally appropriate for a kid. Except for the chloroform thing. Except for the chloroform thing. But it's totally fine. And I can feel people being like, this is just crazy religious people being crazy and religious. And maybe, but, and I'm not saying don't watch it. You can. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah. What age would you say for kids?
I think it's appropriate for any kid, any age at all. It's just that if your worldview is a religious worldview, there's going to be challenges to that that are in there. And the way that kids learn things is through stories. Children learn not to tell lies because of the boy who cried wolf, not because you said don't tell lies. So telling stories is how children learn things. It's why Christians made VeggieTales. It's why, you know, stories have existed since time immemorial. Yeah. So maybe we're overreacting, or maybe that's just that, you know, more than one worldview has picked up on the idea that kids learn through stories.
Yeah. If that's the case, though, by the way, which I tend to agree with you that it is, I don't think that it was a wildly interesting movie. Like, as a 36-year-old who wanted to like the movie and wanted to show my kids the movie, I had a hard time keeping my attention. And so for me, what age would I say? I'd say, like, if you're okay with everything we've talked about, you know, 6, 7, 8, but I don't see a 6, 7, or 8-year-old like being super into the movie either. It was kind of hard to follow even for me. Yeah. And I think I'm semi-smart.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't hard to follow so much. It was just weird at the end. Sort of like,
it's weird.
It's sort of like, what was the ones that we watched most recently? Like the Howl's Moving Castle, where like, there's like something happened that wouldn't really happen. And you're like, it's just like, all right, we just needed a way to move the plot forward. You're like, okay, fine, I guess.
Yeah.
Suspend your disbelief. But there you go. I think it's appropriate for all ages, just if you want to be careful of the worldview.
There you go. Orion and the Dark. If you have any suggestions on things that you'd like us to watch or review or play, video games, music, social media trends, really kind of open to all things here.
Right. Let John's us know. Eaten a Tide Pod. We would love to tell you about it.
I've never eaten a Tide Pod. But I understand why people do. It looks delicious. Okay. I mean, what do you want? Like, it does.
Where can people find us?
IsThisForKids.com is the best place to go, because you can find everything we're doing over there.
But there's just so much out there for parents to wade through.
I'm Jonathan Beard of Blevins.
I'm Katie, Mrs. Ruby. Let us help you decide.
Is This For Kids?